Hi, I'm Roy Spencer of PermaSeal. For over 45 years, we've helped over 500,000 homeowners make their homes drier, healthier, and more valuable. Our warranties are transferable and estimates are free. Call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Hey, good morning, Reg. How you doing? Good, 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 good. No sub sandwich today, huh? Have you tried Jersey Mike's? Oh, you see commercials for that, yeah? You hunt thumbs up to Jersey. Oh, good for you. All right. I've always wondered. I need my sub sandwich has to have good bread. I like a good bread. Yes, the meat's important, but the French bread that covers it all is just important. It has to be, from my view, it has to be soft. If it's hard, I don't like to fight against my sandwich. I like a nice flow with my sandwich. I like to be in one with my bread and my sandwich. I don't like to fight against the bread. It ruins the contents then. If the bread's too hard, it squishes out. It's a whole thing, you know. You're yeah, exactly. You are a veteran of the submarine sandwich. Anyway, you ready to go? Good, good. Put it in the books here, 473. Okay, all set. Trigger finger ready? Good. Three S's, star, smile, strong, and here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Hold on, Reggie. Hold on. The music is very, wait. The music needs to be a little louder than that. Right? Can we do that again? Yeah, that's good. Okay, let's do that again. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Pod. Whoa, slow down, my friend. Now that trigger finger's fast, huh? Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Where else would we be? Of course, listening to the podcast. Always a great way to start your day or your week. But if you need to do some community activity, some volunteer service for your college resume, then get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. If you like what you've been hearing now for more than 9 years, then go to WGNRadio.com, go to the podcast section, hit the prompt for this podcast, and you will find dozens and dozens and dozens of podcasts dating back 2, 3 years. Not all 9. I don't know where those other ones have gone, but... but enough to let you know where you've been or where we've been so you know where we're going. Always fun to take a dip back into the past. But let's go into the future right now, or the present at least, with episode number 473. So I've touched upon this a few times. Never really talked about it in full detail, but I think I need to now. Because it's a big concern, and I think it's going to be our next big problem. I mean, we've got enough going on right now in this world, believe me. But this one could be the most scary. I know you say, Jim, what's more scarier than war? What's more scarier than economic uncertainty? What's more scarier than the divisiveness that's going on in this country and in this world? There's not a lot, believe me. There's a lot going on here, and not a lot of it is very good. But there is something that is hiding in plain sight. And we better recognize it, and we better address it, and we better get it under control, because this can literally control us. And that's not a euphemism. That's not a figurative kind of phrase. No, that's literal. And if you haven't guessed it by now, I'm talking about those two letters that are probably the most Googled in history already, I bet you. Two simple letters. And I guarantee you that they are probably the most Googled or the most searched in the world. And it's taken very little time to break that record. I have no idea what, if that's a true statement, but I wouldn't be surprised. And of course, those two letters are AI. AI. That's all we're hearing about today. AI, 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 AI. It's I, if you will, with the AI. But you know what? We better get our hands around this. We better start paying attention. Because this technology, and you know, those of us, if you've been around the last 50 years or longer, and longer, you've seen even more. But I'll even take the last 50. The last 50 years have been an incredible leap in technology. I mean, when you think about 50 years ago, people were still using typewriters and liquid paper and landline telephones and telegrams. I mean, the communication and standalone film cameras. I mean, I talked about a little about this before about how quickly things have changed. But as I said, it is strange to think that it wasn't all that long ago, and within many people's lifetimes, we have seen drastic changes. And if you've lived longer than 50 years, you really have seen some drastic changes. And the funny thing is, even if you've lived 20 years, you've seen some drastic changes. I was talking about on the podcast a couple weeks ago about just binging on the show 6 Feet Under that came out in 2001 and went, I think, to 2005 and or maybe 2006. And I mean, even 25 years ago, there were things that are completely obsolete or that look like relics today, just from the last 25 years ago. That's how fast technology has changed. Ever since the mid-90s, the internet has just changed everything. And once it was unleashed into the mass public, it just sparked so much inspiration and innovation on how to build on it, it's really been a golden age. Now, we can argue whether how golden it's been. But when you think about the speed and the convenience and the individual power that we have in our hands today because of the smartphone, which again was an outgrowth of the internet, it's pretty scary. And we have not managed it well by any means. And as I said to you many times, if you've listened to the podcast, I worked in the technology world for about 10 years in the public relations side of it. And so I was really on the ground floor right as the tech boom was starting and the internet was beginning to be introduced. That's when I was just beginning. I was in that transition of when we first started to get email, and there were things called CD-ROMs. That was a big deal. And that whole thing. We still used fax machines when you think about it. It's crazy now. Now we have PDF files, and it's just amazing. Hasn't been that long. And I was there at the ground floor, and I saw this all happening, and I spoke with many of a few of the actual well-known tech entrepreneurs that you know today that are now billionaires and celebrities, if you will, of some of the biggest companies in the world. And even, I wasn't hanging out with these people. I'm not trying to create that, but I did meet with a couple of these people that were right at the edge, right on the beginning, forefront of this, as well as some entrepreneurs that I don't know whatever happened to them, but they certainly were giving it their best. It was a very fertile time in the early to mid to late 90s as the internet was just beginning to show its ultimate potential. And I remember at the time sitting down with these people and hearing what their views and hearing what their visions were for this. And at one point being very excited by the opportunities, many of which I would be talking about and promoting. But I was also very apprehensive as well. Because once again, coming from a journalistic point of view, I was looking at both sides of this, and many times I would bring up a possible downside to a new technology or a new application or a new website, and you could see that these tech people didn't really want to hear that. They didn't want to think about that because they were focused on the positive that was going to change things and make them millionaires. They didn't want to hear about, well, but you know, what about this and what about that? And I've said to you many times, if you've been listening, that, I think in any, especially in today's world, I think that if you're developing any kind of new technology at all, especially a technology, you should have somebody there with a hacking, or yes, maybe even a criminal background in hacking. So as you're devising this entire thing and all the great positive things, you've got at least one person in the room whose mind is geared to saying, well, how do I corrupt that? Because that's what's going to happen. And so oftentimes a new technology comes out, it's not fully baked, And suddenly, there's some major scams going on, and the people that developed it can't understand. We didn't expect that. We didn't plan for that. No, you didn't plan for that, but you should have. And on the other side of the coin, this regulating of the technology. Maybe at the development stage, you don't do that. But when it gets ready to get out to the public, somebody needs to raise their hand and say, okay, now what about if this happens? And what about if that happens? But that wasn't happening in the 90s. It was the Wild West. There were no rules as the internet was unleashed on the general public, mainly because it was a gargantuan, not big, not huge. I don't use the word ginormous. I hate that. Gargantuan, because it's not a word. Gargantuan, maybe it is now, but it never was. Gargantuan, I'm going to stay with gargantuan. Gargantuan revenue generator in the world and especially in this country. And at the outset, it was clear that there were a lot of holes in this, and there were a lot of areas where scams and misinformation, all the things that we now deal with on a daily basis that we cannot get our arms around anymore because the genie is out of the bottle, the things that we bemoan about our society, we had a chance to nip those before they ever became a real problem or such a widespread problem. We had that chance. There's not many times where you have a chance to literally start from ground zero, but we did here. This was a new, completely new technology. You know, radio, you know, before the internet, you know, things happened in a gradual way. They built upon each other. And to some extent, the internet did that, obviously. You need, you know, a foundational thing for a platform to be built on. I understand that. But there seemed to be a logical progression of technology. Writing. Then by hand. Then the printing press. Then suddenly, radio, you know, or telegraphs and telegrams, right? Kind of printing and paper, using electricity then, and then suddenly radio. And then radio, if we could send, you know, our voice and sound over the airwaves, well, why can't we send pictures? And then suddenly there's television, and then there's different ways of delivering television over the air, cable. There's ways of manipulating the television image. The DVD, the VHS. But the internet just kind of came out of nowhere. And it was so different. It had such potential. It was so exciting. At that time, in the mid-90s, we really felt like we were in the beginning of a new generation. And in many ways, we were. And we couldn't conceal that excitement. There really was a revolutionary time, a completely different shift in our realities happened because of the internet. And, you know, 35 years later or so, 30 years later, we're experiencing that now, the aftermath of that. And some of it's good and a lot of it's bad. But at the time, right when it was emerging, we had a chance as a society, as a government, as a people, whatever you want to look at it, to say, okay, wait a minute. This is new. This is unknown. And we need to check this out. Because this can have some ramifications. We don't even know the extent to which they can have them, but we can already see the way it's, even in its earliest stages, the internet was showing capabilities that were mind-blowing to us. Today, we take them for granted. At that time, we couldn't believe it. The idea of an email, I got to tell you, folks, if you're of a certain age and you don't understand this, you know, but if you're over 40 years old or 50 years old, the idea of an email was crazy. You mean I can just send this message? I don't have to send a FedEx overnight. That used to be considered high tech, a FedEx package that arrived overnight. That was considered high tech for a long time. That was high tech. Or the mail. The idea of an internet of typing a few things and hitting a button and sending a message around the world and then getting it back within seconds. It was mind-blowing. It still should be mind-blowing when we think about that capability, but now it's become so commonplace, we don't even think about really what's going on. That right now you can log on and talk to a friend in halfway around the world, or around the world. As quick as you can, somebody right next door. It really is a powerful, immensely powerful tool. And we should have recognized the power of that. We should have marveled at the opportunity, but we also should have been very skeptical at the detriment. And we should have, at the very beginning, set parameters, set regulations, set boundaries, set rules for the internet so that as it grew, as we knew it would, and as its usage would grow around the world, and as the applications for it would continue to be developed, we would at least be able to get our arms around it and have some kind of control. But it came out of nowhere. It took everybody by surprise. Its upsides were always being promoted and talked about. Its downsides were mentioned but not elaborated on. And the excitement of it generated not only interest but revenue. Companies were popping out of nowhere. People were, like today in many cases, people were becoming instant millionaires, at least on paper. Stock options, it was the Wild West. It really corrupted a lot of people. It destroyed a lot of people. It made some people huge billionaires. It was a wild time. It was a wild ride, and it did burst for a while, until Steve Jobs came along in 2007. It burst around 2001 or so. 2000, the tech bubble burst. You could probably argue that it really started around 1993 or 94. There was a good 5-6 year run, and then it burst. And then everything calmed down, and things were kind of getting back to the way things were. There was the internet still, but it wasn't continuing to just, you know, go leaps and bounds. And then when the smartphone came in 2007, that changed everything, and we have been on a roller coaster ride ever since then. But my point is that in the early 90s, when this first happened, we had a chance to regulate it, to put some rules around it. But nobody wanted to be the big pin to pop the balloon of prosperity, especially those in government. They didn't want to put shekels is a Yiddish word for money. They didn't want to put shackles on business. They wanted to inspire business. They wanted to encourage business. And they did. And the internet drove that like a steamroller. So much so that during the 90s, this, especially from, say, 95 through 2000, we had incredible prosperity. We had, I don't know how much you pay attention to the news. So many people have been turned off by it because there's so much craziness going on. But I do watch the news. I do listen to the news. I do keep up with it. It's not easy. It's not always fun, but I think it's necessary. So we're sitting on a $35, $36 trillion deficit right now. You know what that means? That means that we have spent $36 trillion more than we've had. Now, and we've all heard the argument, you know, no, why is the government able to do that and exist on a deficit spending reality when we can't bounce a check? Why we can't miss a credit card payment? Why we can't miss an electric bill payment without some consequence? Why can the government continue to spend money that it doesn't have, and they don't get in trouble, but we do? Why do they get a pass on their irresponsibility, and we get penalized for it? It's an old, old argument. But the fact of the matter is that we have a $36 trillion deficit. I'm not a financial wizard, but I do know that that can't be sustained. It can't go to 50. I mean, I guess in some cases, at some point, maybe all this just becomes monopoly money. I don't know. I don't have a grasp of financial vision like that. But I can tell you that I know that a $36 trillion deficit isn't good. people not may not remember this or may not even know it, but in 2001, when George Bush took over from Bill Clinton, Bill Clinton was fortunate enough to be the president during this technology boom in the 90s. Pretty much his whole presidency. He became president in January of 93, and he was president until January of 2001. And within that time, we had both this tech boom, this explosion, this eruption. And toward the end of his presidency, then the bubble burst. But still, those 5 to 6 years were so gargantuan in terms of revenue generation for our government through taxes. Companies making money, taxing the companies. More jobs, more high-paying jobs, more taxes. It may sound crazy, especially as we sit here with a $36, $37 trillion deficit in 2025. 20 years ago, 25 years ago, we had a surplus. We had a surplus. We were not in a deficit. We had a surplus, so much so that the government didn't even know what to do with this money. We never had a surplus. The Congress began to hold hearings on what do we do with this money? It was an embarrassment of riches. It was a problem, and I put that in quotes, that we never had before. It was unprecedented. I'm sure right from the beginning of the country's founding, almost 250 years ago now, don't forget, next July, we're 250 years old. We're almost 249. I guarantee you right out of the box, we were in a deficit. We had to establish a government. We had to establish a country. And suddenly, for the first time, I don't know if it's the first time, but certainly in modern times, we had a surplus. And people were talking about how we could do this to help our infrastructure and build buildings and fix roads education. And oh my God, it was like we were talking about being able to fix so many of the decades and maybe even century-long problems that we had. And it was all based on the revenue generated by technology, and namely, the explosion of the internet. Now, sadly, whatever surplus we had was quickly drained within seconds after 9/11. And just as we were beginning to get our hands around the fact that we have a surplus here, well, then 9/11 happened, and there was no conscientious spending. We spent whatever it took to weed out the terrorists and then go to foreign lands, Iraq and wars, and then we've never stopped since 9/11. But in the late 90s and early 2000s, thanks to the internet, thanks to the business that the internet generated, we had a windfall. And so from that standpoint, those in the government, you could argue, were right. Why put Why put any regulations on this business when it is generating this ridiculous amount of money and making us strong economically, which makes us strong internationally and within our country, strong economy, low unemployment, good paying jobs. Life is good. But as happens all the time, that bubble bursts. And then you're left with reality. And not only were we left with reality when the bubble burst, we are also left now with a technology that had now been ingrained in our behavior. It had changed our behavior, and it had been ingrained in our lifestyle. It's hard to take things away once you've been used to them. Once they've been given to you, you don't want things taken away. If you've never had them, or if you've had them with some conditions, then you don't feel as if something's been taken away from you. That's the way you teach kids, right? Hopefully. I mean, I don't know these days. But the genie was out of the bottle. The government allowed the tech world to monitor itself. We don't want to put any government restrictions on this new technology and the people that are involved in it, because they are generating billions of dollars for our society. And they know more about this than we do anyway, and they, you know, they'll be able to monitor themselves. No. They are not humanitarians. They are business people. I sat across the table from many of them. Yeah, they wanted to do things that were cool, but they also wanted the payday at the end. The owners of tech companies that were on the ground floor of the internet and all the applications, the killer apps, as they were called back then, their big goal was to go become a public company. IPOs, those were the big three letters. Now it's AI, as I said earlier. Those are the two big letters that we talk about today, AI. Back in the 90s, it was three letters, IPO, initial public offering. If you owned a website, if you owned a tech company, you wanted to get to those three coveted letters because that would make you a millionaire overnight. And it did. And so those people then became beholden to stockholders, not the greater good. There are some billionaires and owners of businesses who are very conscientious, humanitarian, philanthropic people. There's no question. But they are also business people, and they are beholden to their employees, to their board of trustees, and to their stockholders. And that really is their first responsibility. Then how it affects people might be somewhere down the line. That's the role of government, to protect the people. But the government had their eyes on the dollar signs and not the downsides of this new technology. And so the internet was allowed to just run wild. And so when we look at ourselves here in 2025 and we see social media and the internet and all the different apps, your TikToks and all the other things that have basically gone unregulated, no rules, allowed to do whatever they can. We have porn popping up. 5-9-year-olds can pull up porn probably if they want to. I mean, it's the access we have today is so unlimited because we didn't put limits on when we should have. And that's why we're in the position we are today, with misinformation, with fake news, with online scams, with identity theft, with online bullying, all these things that have now become major parts of our daily life. Were to some extent avoidable if 30 years ago we would have sat down and said, okay, we've got this new technology and this is great, but we've got to make sure that there are some limits here so that we have a handle on it. But we didn't do that. And we let it run wild, and here we are today. Which brings me to the scary point now about AI. We are at another turning point in technology and civilization, just as we were 30 years ago. If you don't remember that 30 years ago in the mid-90s when the internet came and changed everything, you've got your chance now. The only difference is that AI, artificial intelligence, is not as benign from the outset as the internet once seemed. I don't know if the tech people foresaw the possibilities of the corruption of the internet and didn't want to either admit it or publicize it because there was too much money to be made. I don't know. But clearly, it has happened. And we have to, we're playing catch up, and we'll never catch up. It's too far down the line. We kicked the can when we should have done something. We missed the boat on the internet. And that's why we are today filled with a lot of problems and such a divisiveness that was caused by this technology. There's no question. I'm not saying it was completely created, but whatever divide there is in this country, and as I said, or even around the world, it may not have been created by the internet, and its close cousin, social media, but it certainly has been enhanced by it. And we had a chance to curtail that 30 years ago. If somebody would have had the courage and the guts to say, whoa, yeah, I know there's a lot of upside to this, and I know that there's money flowing in here, and I know that, but we can't let this run wild. We can't depend on business people to have the best interests of humanity at the top of their list. That's what the government's for. If there's anything the government is there for, it should be there to protect the people at the end of the day, physically or virtually. That's the government's role. How much of that protection, we can argue about that. But at the end of the day, that's what the government's for. Our government is there to protect us from invasion. 249 years ago, the invasion was from other countries and armies. Today, the invasion is invisible. Today, the invasion is virtual. And it's harder to catch, it's harder to see, it's harder to understand. But that was the role of government. Our government 30 years ago was our goal. Our government's role was to protect us from the invasion that the internet might and most likely was going to inflict on us. But we didn't want to deal with it because the upside was too lucrative. And so now here we are at another crucial societal technology-based turning point in the history of mankind. And this one is really monumental. The internet, there's no question what it has done. AI builds upon that and makes the internet look like the first stone wheel compared to a rocket ship. That's how different it is. From the first prehistoric wheel to a rocket ship. That's how different AI is from the internet. And the reason I say that is because in the case of AI, we don't even know its capabilities yet. We have a hint. Even those who are on the ground floor of it are beginning to make more predictions now. It was always this nebulous thing, AI, you heard about it maybe 3 or 4 years ago. But now there's people like Sam Altman, who's the head of CPT, and other people. And he's talking a lot more regularly now about AI, because whether you know it or not, we're already using AI. You don't even know it in some cases. You're already being exposed to it. You're already using it yourself. It's becoming already invisible in our daily life. We don't even realize it. And that's why right now, I know the world is filled with so many problems, wars, unrest, political divide, poverty, education, all these problems that continue to haunt us for centuries and decades and even new ones. But I have to tell you, amongst all the clutter, we cannot make the same mistake we did with the internet with AI. And I'm no AI expert, but I can tell you, since I'm paying attention to this, that the one difference that I see this time, which causes me concern, as opposed to the way it was 30 years ago at the introduction of the internet to the masses, as I said, back then, all we heard about was the positives. The convenience, the speed. We didn't hear about the downsides. Identity theft, scams, bank accounts, you name it. We didn't hear about that. From the people that were developing it, all we were hearing about were the positives, how everything was going to change for the better. We were finally getting close to that Jetsons world we had seen in the cartoon. Not there, but getting close. At least closer than we were. And we were almost like, well, how come we're not there yet? And the internet kind of just said, wait a minute, we can get there now. Well, oh, I see a pathway. And we all jumped on, as it was called, the information superhighway. We all jumped on and we all merged and we all drove that information superhighway. And today's mess is the destination. What scares me about AI, I don't pretend to be an expert on it, but what scares me about it, compared to the way the internet was introduced to us, and we saw what that's done, how that's gone out of control. What scares me is the people who are behind it, the developers of AI. In fact, I saw an interview with the person who invented AI. And he said, I'm afraid of this. Now, that's like, you know, even Dr. Frankenstein initially loved his creation. He later found and saw how dangerous it was. And we didn't listen to Dr. Frankenstein. We killed him. And the Frankenstein monster went on to make several movies for 80 or 90 years. If we would have listened, it's alive! It's alive! If we would have listened to him, instead of killing him, he may have been able to rein in his monster, but we didn't do that. And so the monster continued to reign his terror. He even met Abbott and Costello. That's what scares me about AI. The people that are developing it, the inventor who came up with it, is already sending warnings as it is gradually and quickly being implemented right before our eyes. It's hiding in plain sight. You are using AI. At the very least, you are exposed to it, and you don't even know it. If you're watching social media, there are images, there are things there that are generated by AI. If you go on the internet to find information, a lot of that now is generated by AI. You don't even know that. And you're taking it for fact. We are at the very beginning of this. And now is the time when I know there are dozens of huge societal distractions. But we better get our attention on this, and we better not let this run wild, because this is going to run wild a lot quicker and a lot faster than the internet did, and it's going to do way more damage. As the inventor of AI said, as AI continues to be more present in our society, it will be the first time in the history of human existence. Are you grasping this? It's as monumental as it sounds. For the first time, this technology will make a new reality in our lives. And that reality will be that for the first time in human existence, humans, will not be the most intelligent thing in the world. This computer program, this technology, will be smarter than a human, faster, smarter. It will think. It will make its own. It will make up whatever kind of mind it will have. It will be able to do things and reason. During the 70s and 80s, when there was so much talk about nuclear weapons and nuclear energy, the argument for it was, okay, yes, there's no question that a lot of the responsibility for this is putting in the hands of machines, in computers. However, at the end of the day, humans are still making the decisions. They're the ones who are programming it. They're the ones that are running it. So there is still a layer of human interaction that will stop the computer. And that was kind of the argument. AI eliminates that. For the first time in human history, this technology will develop, and it's developing so quickly now because of the way it has been put together. It's learning capacity. For the first time, technology is not just accessing. It's thinking. It's learning. And it's acting on the lessons it's learned. For those of you who have ever seen, if you haven't seen it, I would strongly urge you to see it. Not only is it an amazing cinematic accomplishment, but it was a early cautionary tale. Stanley Kubrick's film, 2001: A Space Odyssey, which came out in the late 60s. I'm sorry, but I'm going to give you a spoiler alert here, but the movie's been out, you know, for almost 60 years. So if you haven't seen it by now, I'm sorry. I think the spoiler alert is expired. Ultimately, at the heart of that story, and granted, it's a science fiction film, at least at the time it was, and it's not the easiest film to follow. It's beautiful to look at. But at the heart of it is this computer called HAL. And ultimately, HAL stops taking orders and starts making decisions against those who are programming him. Hi, Dave. That was 60 years ago almost. The first hints that there was this technology, that there was this possible opportunity for this technology to not just follow orders, but to make the orders. And that was the first hint of it. And Stanley Kubrick and Alan Clark, I'm trying to think. I don't think it was Alan now. The writer of 2001. I have to look that up. I don't want to get that wrong. The author of the book 2001, and then worked with Kubrick, and so Kubrick had access to his thinking and his knowledge. And not only after he made 2001, but one of his last projects that he never got a chance to fully make into a film, he started a script, which then Steven Spielberg finished and made a film out of, and it wasn't that big of a hit, but it was called AI, Artificial Intelligence, and it was about this topic. It was more about a robot, but it was about the learning capability of a computer. So Stanley Kubrick was on the cutting edge of this. And here we are, almost 60 years after Space Odyssey came out, and it's a reality, and it's a fast moving reality. It's not 3 years away. It's not 10 years away. It's here. And my fear is that not only are we not recognizing the danger in this, the real danger of this, and we're letting it just happen again, no rules. Yes, tech companies have a conscience, but they also are there to make money. They are there to please their stockholders. We can't count on the tech world to regulate AI. And I fear that that's what we're doing right now. I fear that we are not going to do what we should have done 30 years ago. Put limits on this before it's too late. Because this one is scary. This one changes everything. We're already hearing, as I said, we're hearing from the tech developers of this. Arthur Clark is his name, by the way. Alan Clark, I think, was in the Hollies or the Birds, the group. Arthur C. Clark co-wrote the screenplay with Kubrick. But, you know, this, the people that are in it, they are sending messages. They're already talking about within 5 years, it's possible that AI will get rid of many entry-level jobs. We could have 20% unemployment. And that's 5 years. Hey, that's 2030, folks. It's not 15 years, not 20 years. That's only 5 years away. Think about COVID. You remember COVID? That was 5 years ago. How fast did that 5 years go by? What scares me, as I said, is that the people who are involved in this, on the cutting edge of this, the developers of this, they are sending these warning shots. I don't know if they're sending it to cover their asses or to be helpful. Like, hey, well, we told you about this. Don't say we didn't tell you. You guys didn't do anything about it. Or are they really concerned to say, hey, folks, I got to tell you, this stuff, yeah, there's no question this AI is going to do some great things, but there's also some really big downsides, and we better start thinking about this. I get a sense that there is some humanitarianism here. But I don't see the general public, and I don't see the government paying attention. And there's going to come a point when they stop warning us, and they just go, you know what? If they don't care, I don't care. And we'll just see what happens. Because that's what happened with the internet. The government said, hey, you know, nobody really cares too much. All I know is everybody's happy. They got jobs. We got money in the bank. We got surplus here. Let it go. And now we are where we're at. This technology has some very serious ramifications. And I don't know if we're paying attention. I don't know if we really have grasped the seriousness of this. Did you hear about a story that happened a few months ago that affected one of our newspapers here in Chicago, the Chicago Sun-Times, which has put a huge black mark on the integrity and reputation of that newspaper? An entire section of the newspaper that was used, that was created by an outside source, but the newspaper, the Sun-Times, branded it, they bought it, they used the service, and they branded it as their own and put it in their newspaper. It was a supplementary section about things to do this summer. And there was a story in there about 10 or 15 top books to read this summer. Well, apparently, the quote-unquote, in quotes, journalist who wrote the story generated this story mostly using AI. And I don't know why this happened or how this happened. As I said, I'm not a tech wizard on this, but the reality is that he wrote this story using AI-generated information. He took that AI-generated information, put it into this story, didn't check it, sent it off. The editors at the company King Features, who made the supplement, didn't fact check any of this. They printed the story, sent it out to those who picked up the service. Sun-Times received it. Didn't fact check it, printed it up, stuck it into its newspaper, and gave it to the public. And then suddenly, I'm not sure how it happened, but as the supplement was out into the real world, I don't know if it was the writer himself or it was someone else who decided to check these names of these books that were generated by AI, and I'm not sure how or why it happened, but many, if not all of them, were completely fabricated and made up by the AI technology. These books, these titles, they never existed. And nobody checked it. The writer gets a little credit for admitting what he did instead of trying to come up with some lame excuse, which would have really gotten him in more trouble. I don't think he had any choice but to admit what he did, and apparently he admitted it very quickly. He didn't stonewall. He didn't hide in a bunker. Doesn't matter. As a journalist, he should have known that even if he used this AI technology, which a lot of journalists are using because it is so quick at generating and finding facts, but there still needs to be the journalistic principles of fact-checking that go into it. But in our convenience world here, our convenience-oriented world here, we just say, well, you know, people still go to Wikipedia like it's fact. Wikipedia is not fact. Wikipedia is information that is inputted by the public. It doesn't have to be true. But people look at Wikipedia like it's fact-checked. It isn't. AI is not fact-checked. Somebody has to do it. But we're not doing that. Because once again, folks, we have to remember, human beings will always take the easy way. We try to put ourselves up on a pedestal, but we are at the bottom of the pedestal. We will always take the easy way. And we can't afford to take the easy way with AI. The Sun-Times got caught. Huge egg on its face. Who knows if it can ever recover? The only thing that keeps our newspaper viable is its journalistic integrity. And the Sun-Times proved that it has some major weaknesses in that category. In a time when newspapers are falling by the wayside to begin with, if you lose your journalistic integrity, then I don't know what makes you worthy to stick around anymore. And we'll see what happens to the future of the Sun-Times. This is no joke. They put out an apology. They said they've put new policies in place. But the damage has been done. And this is a warning shot. This is a very small, this didn't affect anybody except people who wanted to read books this summer. But it shows you the way we are using AI, the way we are relying on AI, and how it is putting out false information, and it is having detrimental effects. This is a very low-level example of it. But it shows you the chain of events, the mistakes that humans made, the power of AI, and the detriment that it can have. That's real. You can follow that. You can say, oh, Jim, who cares? It's only a story about 15 summer books. Yeah. But what's the next one going to be? And the one after that? This happened. I don't see the government reacting. Yes, okay. Privately, King Features and the Sun-Times and other newspapers that use that supplement are working together to come up with policies to make sure this never happens, blah, blah, blah. You know, the reporter, I'm not even going to say his name, doesn't deserve it, as his name said, probably will never get another job because he has no credibility. And he deserves not to get one. But I don't hear an outcry from the government to say, whoa, 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 what happened here? Maybe we need to start to pay attention to this. Why not? We are already letting this is a low-level example of how AI can get us in trouble. And it's a great way because it didn't cause major damage, but it shows the damage that can be made if it was in another era or area. Extrapolate that and put it into something that really means something. I don't see the outrage. I don't see the concern. I don't see the fear. And my fear is we're going to let this same thing happen again that we let the internet go wild. The only problem is if you let AI go wild, it won't stop. It will make the decisions for us. It is smarter than us. It is faster than us. We will be ruled by it. I'm not saying it's going to happen in the next 5 years, but if left unchecked, I'd love to be around 50 years from now and see what the world looks like. If we let AI go unchecked, like we let the internet initially go unchecked, AI is here, and it's here to stay. It's already a part of our lives, whether we know it or not. It's hiding in plain sight, and we are oblivious. We better wake up on this one, folks, because something really bad is going to happen. It's inevitable. If we let this just develop on its own and just go out there and without any restrictions, without any oversight, something serious is going to happen. And then we're going to say, what? How could this have happened? How can we stop this? It's not a tragedy. That will not be a tragedy. Don't call it a tragedy. The tragedy is right now. Our inaction is the tragedy. We will have created the tragedy. And by the time we realize it, by the time it does some real damage, it destroys lives, it destroys whatever it may be, and it will happen if it's left unchecked. We will say, how could this happen? Oh, then there's going to be congressional committees, and it's too late. We better get our house in order on this. The developers of AI, in their own subtle way, even though they're business people, I think they're sending us a message. Pay attention to us, folks. We're giving you a little warning shot here, but it's not going to last forever, because if we see that you're apathetic about this, then we'll just go and make billions off of it. And we'll see what happens. We'll keep our fingers crossed. And we've seen how keeping our fingers crossed works for us so far in this world. It hasn't really been a good track record of, oh, nothing will happen, we'll just keep our fingers crossed. That hasn't really been a really good philosophy. Sadly, it's the one that we have followed in most instances, which has gotten us into this point where we are today. Stanley Kubrick warned us in 1968. Sam Altman and others are warning us in 2025. I hope we listen. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 473. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears.